Hey everyone, before we start the show, just wanted to make an announcement introducing our new sponsors, Treehouse Teas, which is a boutique tea company based in Honolulu, Hawaii. They specialize in Hawaii-grown teas and botanicals. They work directly with farmers to bring their customers the largest assortment of 100% Hawaii-grown teas at the most affordable pricing. Check them out on Instagram at treehouse.teas and use order code SLEEPTIMESOVER to receive 10% off your order. And our second sponsor introduction is the man known as Earl Kakaako. He, of course, has two locations in Kaimuki and in Kakaako. They bring their take on classic American sandwiches. Every weekend, specials coming out. The regular menu item is always fantastic. Anyone who's had an Earl sandwich can attest to this. It's always great. Please check them out. They've been down since day one. Earl don't flex for the gram, as he always says, they flex for you. And be sure to mention when you're at Earl Kakaako, Sleep Time's Over, to receive 10% off your order.
You're now listening to Sleep Time's Over.
Sleep Time is over, baby.
And we're back. Don't you love it when we leave off on a cliffhanger?
You know, when you mention the cliffhanger, I don't remember the cliffhanger until you remind me.
Right.
Yes, because right. It's all erased from my memory.
Yeah, it's like the movie Memento. Your memory is erased as soon as we're done.
I live that every hour. So, yeah, we're back.
Well, we're back again, and thank you guys for tuning in. Apologies on the last episode for the little spotty audio, and I have to say that was my fault. We have a new mic set up, and I decided to scream into the microphone.
You're a very excitable guy. Okay?
I get really excited when we talk about 90s hip hop.
You get sometimes way too much excited. So therefore, for the people that don't know Sky Cameron.
Yes.
He's an excitable guy.
Yes.
He gets excited over this shit. Mike's picked that up. So I had to rework the angles. Shout out Dilate
Peoples. We also record this in the morning. I'm heavily caffeinated.
So, oh, is that why?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm drinking coffee now, so who knows who's going to be loud this week.
Well,
makes
that's
sense.
Right. Well, once again, I am Sky Cameron, Somalia to the stars, and I'm with the always impeccable Aaron Sakai here. Illustrious, impeccable.
I remember that word. Yeah.
Give you all of that.
A lot of syllables.
And we are back with another. We're in episode 11.
Tough.
Episode 11 of the year in hip hop 1994, where we review every album or attempt to mention every rap album produced in 1994 that was released on a semi-legitimate label. That's
if you haven't figured this show out yet, everyone.
Yes. So we're continuing on our discussion of sophomore successes and slumps, and we're concentrating on last week's episode was rap duos, and there was one rap duo we didn't get to talk about, and then we're gonna go into rap trios. I know you're excited.
All right. I'm waiting for the rap quadruples at this point.
That's right.
All right, so this week is rap trios. Is this what you're saying?
This is rap duos and trios.
Oh, duos and trios.
And we're starting it off with legendary, iconic Port Arthur, Texas duo, Pimp C and Bun B. This is Super Tight. It's the sophomore album from UGK, the Underground Kings. It was released August 30th, 1994 on Jive Records. Chad Butler, a.k.a. Pimp C, Bernard Freeman, a.k.a. Bun B. What was your initial thoughts? Were you a fan? I remember when UGK first came out, their twang was so heavy. We never heard anybody rapping with that kind of southern twang before.
Yeah.
So it was jarring in the beginning, right?
Exactly.
Especially for like East Coast heads like us.
Well, once again, you don't have anything to compare it to. You don't have anything to really tell you if it's good or bad. So you're going to be listening to this and you're going to be like, okay, it's different. It sounds different than the East Coast stuff. But people must be digging it because they have a following, so then we kind of just force ourselves to be like, be open-minded to it and like get into it and not refuse
it. You remember when Pocket Full of Stones came out and like Yom TV was playing it, you know, like it was put on the Menace to Society soundtrack. They're pushing Jive was pushing Underground Kings hard.
They did a good job of marketing, unlike some of these
really
other labels.
I remember buying the cassette single and putting it on and then just going like, yeah, this is too country for me. But it introduced me to southern rap.
Yes.
You know, because Ghetto Boys never, I mean, besides Willie D, we never heard anybody with that thick of a Southern accent on right. a hip-hop, on a mainstream hip-hop record, really.
So it was because of us being as open-minded as we could be at the time.
Yeah.
That was what got us through it and got us to like it.
Yeah, it was persevering. It was actually this album. I mean, their debut album just wasn't really, like, that Too Hard to Swallow album wasn't really my thing, but it was this album that got me into them.
This was the peak.
This was, to me,
one of the peaks.
I think it was a very successful, they combined a lot of different sounds on this one. Their Pimp C's production really matured. But I'll give you a little background on the group. Chad and Bernard grew up in the same neighborhood in Port Arthur, Texas. They initially didn't like each other. That was the whole urban legend about them. But they did have a love for 80s hip-hop at the time when they were friends, and a love of just funk music in general. And Pimp C was actually the son of a jazz musician. I didn't know this. Did you know that?
Usually, these guys usually have fathers that are jazz musicians.
Yeah.
You notice that trend, right? That's why they're into music. That's basically it.
That's why they have this incredible access to albums from their fathers, right? His father was a trumpet player, a session player, played with a lot of different jazz musicians. And then Pimp C grew up singing in the choir. And then he taught himself, self-taught piano, trumpet, and drums all by ear.
That's a factor.
Dude, that's pretty amazing.
When you have the dad or mom or both that are into music,
right,
it leads to things, and that's the trend that we see with all of these guys.
Right. You know, so it got him into beat making as a teenager, and then, you know, then kind of linked up with Bun B, who was basically rapping at the time.
Right.
And I never knew how Bun B got his name, but his childhood nickname was Bunny. That's what his family called him since he was a child. He's Bernard, but they called him Bunny.
Okay.
And then they just shortened it Bun B as the rapper name.
To make it hip.
And they called themselves the Underground Kings due to the fact they would rhyme with such a head. They would rep Texas with that slang and that Southern drawl. Most outsiders, when they heard them rap, if they came in from out of town, they didn't understand what they were saying.
Makes sense.
And they said, oh, we're Texas Underground. We're Underground slang. So that's the history of the name. But I think with this album, you see Pimp C's evolution. His production is very soulful. He samples a lot of classic 70s soul records, whereas like the East Coast guys were sampling a lot of the jazz, more obscure jazz stuff. He was really putting in that soul samples.
He had the availability to do so, and from parenting.
Right, and I love the fact that with this album, he's combining samples, but also combining the live instrumentation, so he's playing a lot of the instruments.
Right.
So I think that's what really made Pimp C stand out.
Well, they're true musicians, right? You talk a lot about these gangster guys and, you know, where their upbringing is from and their history. These are true musicians that have this unique style. It fit. The formula was there.
And the key to a great rap duo, and we can say this about like Outkast, and we can talk about, you know, like Fife and Q-Tip as far as a duo of MCs within Tribe. I mean, they really play well off each other, and such two distinctly different voices and different rhyming styles. I think that's what, you know, there's a lot of rapper too duos that came out where the guys kind of sound too similar.
Yeah.
You know, and then it just gets repetitive and the album just lacks that diversity of flow.
Shout out UMCs.
Yeah. Shout out UMCs. I couldn't really tell if it was Cool Kim or Ozzy rapping. You're right.
That's
so,
the thing.
You know, I think it's the combination of like the sulfur production, you know, Pimp C's like pimpish rap style, and then Bun B had like was smooth and had that deep voice and that deep cadence, you know, and they became a local sensation. You know, they sold a shitload of tapes out of their car. They were selling it in local record shops, and they caught the attention of Jive Records. And Jive, on their first deal, they signed him to a 5-album deal in 92. That's pretty major.
You don't hear that often.
No, you don't hear that too often. 5-record deal?
No.
So they had a success with the two debut singles, Something Good and Pocketful of Stones, and they would go on to sell 250,000 copies of the debut album, which was
decent.
Pretty decent. Yeah, pretty decent. So super tight. They went back into the studio, took elements of their debut. Everything got stepped up, right? And Pimp C handles the entire production just with two songs co-produced by DJ DMD, who was like a another Houston legend, and he was a part of a group called Point Blank. But what did you think? Did you buy this album, or did you just have the singles, or was this something you appreciated but never bought?
Well, the albums I got, the singles I got, they had good remixes on here.
Yeah.
You know, shout out to the people who know Asylum. Hey, Look Away Now. This is the beat. Whenever I hear this beat, I always think of Asylum. You want to talk about nerd shit? There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
But then they used this beat too.
This was the second single, right? It's supposed to bubble.
Yeah.
And then we played the first single, the front, back, side to side.
Yeah, that had remixes on it.
Right. This is definitely riding in the car music.
Definitely is. It's a niche market.
It's a niche market. Yeah.
It's either you like it or you don't. It comes down to when did you get into this hip hop music. That's going to determine whether you like this or not.
Right.
If this is 2020 and you're introduced to this as brand new, you're probably going to shut it down because the open-mindedness will not probably be there.
Right.
Back then, we didn't have much to go on. It's decent if you like New York hip-hop, but you have to pretty much appreciate the Southern originality of this whole group, album, the whole thing.
I mean, these guys are the precursor to the South taking over hip hop.
Well, right.
I mean,
and this is groovy music. This isn't total gangster like Bay Area shit.
No.
So I think people in New York could get into that, which they did. But it's a uniqueness that the South had that was not shown.
Yeah.
It was either West Coast, East Coast. That's it.
UGK won you over with the fact they didn't compromise where they came from to conform.
Right.
They were who they are.
There's no gimmicks.
There's no gimmicks. And I think that hip hop fans, and especially New York fans, they appreciate authenticity.
Right.
You know?
That was always big. Keep it real was always big in 94.
Keep it real.
That's everybody was saying, keep it real, keep it real.
Right.
There you go.
So yeah, and I always appreciated that UGK, when they put out the vinyl singles, Pimp C always had cool remixes on it.
Yes, so, the remixes were really great.
So there is a really cool remix for It's Supposed to Bubble and a good remix for Front, Back, Side to Side. You can listen to them on YouTube. They're not available on streaming services.
Right.
But this album was initially, you know, like slower in sales than the debut when it first dropped, because I don't think the singles weren't as flashy as Pocket Full of Stones and whatnot.
Right.
But the album, they pushed it and Jive, you know, slowly like help them market the singles, and they would go on to sell 375,000 copies. So it would continue their reputation as like really at that point one of the South's premier groups.
Right.
It was them and Ghetto Boys, I think, that were really, you know, an Outkast at this time was coming out.
That was it, really.
Right.
That was basically it.
Because there, you know, besides the Rap-A-Lot portfolio, like we didn't have a ton of big hits in Rap-A-Lot. It was this, you were, we talked about just the underground fans of,
right,
of
the Odd Squad.
Oh, yeah. And we're gonna go into Odd Squad in a couple episodes.
We haven't talked about Odd Squad yet?
We are, yeah.
Oh,
are.
Shit.
I'm a fan. Yes.
It was good, it was decent. Yeah.
So, anyways, I this is 11 tracks. I think maybe only one song I don't like, which is the pussy song, which I'm...
Didn't all these albums have one pussy song?
They always had one pussy song.
You gotta have one pussy song, it's required.
It's called Pussy Got Me Dizzy. That's the only song on the album I don't care for. And it's nothing to do with the subject matter, it's just the songs, I'm just not a...
It could happen, you know, you could get dizzy over the pussy,
right. But I would say, like, overall, solid album. I don't have a skip on it besides that one track.
Right. The pussy song.
Right, besides the pussy one. Yeah.
Go figure.
They're still considered the most influential Southern hip-hop groups of all time. Greatest rap, Southern rapping duo of all time.
Yes.
What do you think the source gave this album?
94, they got Dr. Dre dealing with, they got hopeful East Coast stuff. I'm going to go 4.
They give it 3.5.
Okay. They weren't sold yet.
I think they undershot it on this one.
They weren't sold yet. They weren't quite sold yet.
Maybe, yeah. They gave the debut album 3 mics and gave this one 3.5. So
they
maybe, because we always talked about the source being such a big East Coast thing, and also Dre, like I said, West Coast was taking over.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think the South quite was getting its props just yet.
It wasn't a real authentic rating system. I mean, quite frankly.
Right.
There's payouts. There's money under the table. Record labels under the
table.
Yeah,
that's true.
If you say something too harsh,
there was a lot of payola going on.
Right. So, and you got to watch your back. If you call somebody's album like Two Mics, the guys would like legitimately come over there and be like, "What the fuck?"
Yes. Shout out Almighty RSO.
Right. So you got these. It's a slippery slope here with all of this. So you got to go, and but you got to sell records. You got to sell magazines.
Right.
So if you make a magazine, put Chronic as Two Mics, fuck you. Everybody's going to be like, what the fuck?
I think it's a great album.
This is a better than 3.5 mic album.
This is a, I would say I give it four, I'll give it four mics. Back then, I give it four mics now. It's a solid album.
I go the same.
Yeah. And UGK will go on to release three more albums before Pimp C's passing in 2007 from an accidental overdose. Drinking that lean, that codeine. Got to be careful of that stuff. And then he would release a posthumous UGK album in 2009. And they both had successful solo careers. Pimp C released two solo albums in 2005 and 2006. And then they would release another posthumous solo album in 2010. And Bun B's been prolific, right?
Yeah.
The guy released five albums between 2005 and 2018. And then just recently released his Static Selecta, Trill Static.
Right.
Album, which I didn't know this. I guess I read about it, but I forgot. It was conceived and created on the spot in 11 hours. And they did it live stream. So it's pretty amazing. Yeah, Static created the beat, and then he wrote the rhymes on the spot, and they did it. So I just got to ask one question before we move on. Where do you rank UGK in your favorite rap duos of all time? So not including the MC-DJ combo, so no Gangstar, no Eric B. Rakim, but EPMD, Mobb Deep, Outkast, Clips, Dog Pound, Capone and Noriega, Pete Rock, Seal Smooth, Black Star, etc. Do they rank top 5 for you, top 10, top 20?
If I gotta go off the top of the dome here, I go top 15.
Top 15, okay.
Without trying to add up all the list of names here, right. I would go 15.
Yeah, I think they'll be probably, I think top 15 is good. I think bottom top 10 for me, maybe.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah.
Possibly, yeah. I can see that.
Right. Because for the South, yeah, it's pretty much Outkast, 8-Ball, MJG, and these guys as kind of like my favorites.
Right.
So you got a mic rating then and now? You go with the 4 and 4? Or
I stay with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll say unanimously, we think this is a sophomore success. We recommend you guys check out the album. If you're into UGK or only know them from Big Pimpin', which a lot of people only knew them from Jay-Z's Big Pimpin'.
Right, but it blew them up.
And, it did blow them up.
And rightfully so. So it was good for them.
I would definitely recommend going and checking out Super Tight. All right. Going on to...
No, see, when you laugh like that, okay?
Yes, come I on. Know, I know.
What is
it was
shit?
A duo that became a trio, but not for the better. It's Original Flava, and the album is Beyond Flava.
Wait a minute. This came out in 94?
This is released February 22nd, 1994, on Atlantic Records.
Jeez, because this song came out in 93.
This song dropped in 90, at the end of 93, correct.
And this was a fun song. A lot of people like this song.
Right. This is Can I Get Open.
And this was great. I don't know anybody that didn't like this song. And there's a video. This was played on the radio a lot. This was played on college radio a lot. This was played on 102.7 Radio Free a lot.
Yeah, this song got decent promotion. I think Atlantic promoted it, but remember, I think they waited a little bit too long for the album because the single dropped in, was it late summer of 93 maybe?
It had to be midsummer, right?
Yeah.
Middle of the year.
And then they're dropping the album in February 22nd.
Big mistake.
Yeah.
We all forgot about it.
So this is the sophomore group from New York-based group Original Flava. So the duo was originally founded by North Carolina born rapper David Willis, aka Ski. We know him now as Ski Beats, the producer. And it was a New York MC Paul Revere's, aka Suave Lover. Do you remember their debut album? When I Make It.
Yeah.
When I Make It was the one single they had, the one music video. Yo MTV Raps actually played it.
They played
a decent amount.
It was pretty forgettable though. It didn't hit
it was kind of generic.
It didn't hit the tracks.
Right.
But
it was like kind of like they were trying to build off of like Mecca and the Soul Brother, They Reminisce
that
Over
style.
You kind of sound, right?
Right.
So the history of this group is they were originally linked and promoted by legendary New York DJ Clark Kent, who was an A&R at Atlantic Records at the time. and Original Flavor has the honor to be the first group ever managed by Rockefeller's co-founder, Damon Dash.
That is correct.
Yes.
Yep.
And...
and here's Jay-Z now, rhyming.
And here's Jay-Z, yes.
Yeah.
Legendary, legendary verse here, stealing an entire album away.
Pretty much.
You listen, he has two verses on this album. He guest stars on two songs on this album.
Right.
And steals the entire album.
Right. And this is straight off of Evolution from Hawaiian Sophie.
Yeah. And the Originators with Jazzo.
So he's coming into his own. But this song is, I would say, maybe close to a Five Mic song.
We never talked about this song.
It's a great song. It's kind of up there with Scenario, I would have to say.
When you would like DJ for hip hop heads, would you drop this in?
Oh, definitely, yeah. If it's like gonna be like one of those hip hop nights, yeah, definitely. People know this song.
So I can't recommend you guys going and listening to their 1992 first album, and I can barely recommend this album. We'll go into it, but
You
know, Swab Lover left after you know, the first album just didn't do well. It was a commercial failure.
Yeah.
And then Damon Dash and Ski were like, okay, well, let's make the group more New York. And brought in this other New York rapper, T-Strong. I don't even remember T-Strong. So they made and then they brought in DJ Chubby Chub.
Right. I remember that.
And so that the duo of Original Flavor now became a trio.
Right.
And you were correct. So they did release... the Can I Get Open in summer 93, and they released two other singles in 93. It was called Here We Go Fuck It Up.
Wow.
And they had another song called All That.
I remember All That.
And they had let's see if we can play All
That. Play the Here We Go Fuck It Up, but I don't remember that at all.
Right. So that I think obviously only two singles really caught on, and it was Can I Get Open the biggest, and then All That, you kind of remember it.
Okay, I remember that.
Right.
Because I remember when the show All That came out for Nickelodeon, they used that.
Right.
So I remember that part. That show came out after this, but yeah.
All right. So, you're right. But Can I Get Open was the song that you actually were like, oh, it's arguably their best song. Probably it is their best song.
It is their best song.
Right.
Confirmed. There ain't nothing else close.
And hearing Jay-Z on it was... really the biggest thing.
Well, the fun thing about that is everybody had a different voice. Everybody had a different little gimmick, right? The guy with the, you know, the first rapper all the way to Jay-Z, everybody had their own style. It was like Scenario.
Right.
Yeah. It's fun. The beat was great. It was upbeat. The chorus worked for 93. It's a five mic song. I'm going to say it's a five mic song.
But it was not really a hit outside of East Coast and East Coast fans.
Of course, right?
Like you said, it got a little radio play, and I think people probably hear the song and go, oh, I recognize it, but I don't think they know who it is.
Right.
Like, that's a perfect song to play in Who Dis, our trivia game, and I don't think people would get it.
People, I don't think will get it.
But you
it
remember
depends on who you have the crowd.
But you remember the Source was hyping the song because Jay-Z, and it got everybody buzzed about Jay-Z, and we're like, who's this guy Jay-Z? Or meaning like, well... we knew who he was from Jazzo, but he was just Jazzo's sidekick.
So we didn't know much emerging about him. Right. He was just another guy. He fit well with those guys. Great song.
But I think what happened was Damon Dash got him on a song, and they knew this guy was a star.
Yeah.
You know? So it to me, this album serves more as a fun time capsule for seeing the foundation of Rockefeller being built.
Oh, clearly, right.
Because the album, you also have like an early verse on this album from Sauce Money. You know, you got...
How about this? Go back to the Can I Get Open. Okay. Can you go to the Jay-Z verse?
Oh, sure.
So, for the listener out there that maybe didn't catch it, we're going to go back to the Jay-Z verse again. So you get to hear Jay-Z in 93. So you see how he goes and skips over the words, and I don't even know what you call
he
that.
He was positioning as this tongue-twisting rapper.
There's a tongue-twisting,
super fast. Yeah.
So this is Jay-Z.
Jay-Z said that he was influenced by Big Daddy Kane and jazz for this style, and he was like wanted to be the fastest rapper in New York because that was the hot style at the time.
But you see the evolution of this.
Right.
Where you...
totally.
93, Dead Presidents is going to come out 95, 96... That was the next thing. In my lifetime, Dead Presidents. Yeah. Knows how to change with the times. Knows how to evolve with the times. He now moved on to a Nas type of flow as he went to Dead Presidents and In My Lifetime. Not anymore.
He had one of the best career evolutions. This was the Can I Get Open remix that was only on vinyl. I'm not sure if you had this one.
Yep.
Yeah. So this was like the little bit more darker East Coast version.
This is a classic 93.
Right.
Sounds like Double X Posse.
Yeah. You can't get this album on streaming services. So the only way you can get this album right now is actually on YouTube.
Wonderful.
Only way you can listen to it.
Okay, YouTube subscribers.
Yep.
Enjoy.
But I recommend listening to the album for like the Posse Cut Many Styles, which also features a great Jay-Z verse.
Yeah.
Checking out the song Hit, which has an early Sauce Money verse.
Hit was, I think that was the B-side of Can I Get Open.
You're right. Hit.
Yeah.
And then I really recommend you guys check out this entertaining skit called The End Code. And it's the entire skit is Damon Dash talking shit.
About what?
About everything. Oh. Women, money, the business.
When does he not do that, quite
right,
frankly?
But it highlighted like the charisma and aggressiveness.
There's
that,
the foundation
like,
of him.
That he would become famous for. And right. Maybe infamous is the
yes,
better
more than famous
word. But I'd say overall, you listen to the album as a whole, it's pretty dated. It felt like it should have been released in 93.
They blew it on the timing.
I agree.
They blew it on the scheduling. They should have released that September, October of 93.
Let's play Hit. But did you buy this album?
I did not. Ooh. Because I forgot about them.
Oh, by like the time the album dropped in February, you were like, oh, this is old,
it's
93.
Like, fuck it. I mean, shit.
Right.
Whatever.
It's a lot of like call and response choruses.
Right.
A lot of screaming. It was like still kind of going on this. Like, this sounds like a 92.
This is very generic.
Right.
Very generic.
But this is kind of a clear example of what the album felt like. It just felt old. By this point in 94, the beginning of 94, it felt kind of played out.
Way too late.
So the album was not a success.
No
but
shit.
It was a catalyst for the formation of Rockefeller, because they formed Rockefeller right after this album.
Right.
And then Ski became like a big producer in the
right,
90s.
Right. These guys
the
all went.
Beats,
yeah, they right? went their ways.
And Ski would go on to produce Jay-Z's first singles, In My Lifetime and Dead Presidents.
Yeah.
So classics. And then the Ski legacy would build because he would go on to produce Camp Lo's debut album in 97.
That is correct, yes.
Sonny Chiba and Geechee Suede.
That's 96.
That's
right?
97, right? Well,
Camp Lo's 97? Yeah.
The album came out in 97.
Yeah.
I think Luchini came out end of 96, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Luchini, and they had, what's the other song?
Black Nostalgia.
No, that's the second one.
The single,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the other one. No, but the other single besides Luchini, I'm just drawing a blank right now.
Wasn't it Black Nostalgia?
Right.
It had the sample from... See, we were talking about 96, 97
yes,
shit in the
yeah.
show.
I'm in a 94 state of mind.
You're an excited state of mind. It's Camp Lo had the second Black Nostalgia. It had to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, there was three singles. It was Black Nostalgia. It was Luchini, and there was one more. So,
oh, shit.
But anyways,
gotta look this up.
But another fun fact about Ski, he would come out with Sporty Thieves.
That is correct.
In 98. With
no pigeons.
No pigeons,
that's
yes.
I agree, Ski.
And their album Street Cinema. So,
oh, Coolie High.
Coolie High, yes.
Yeah, that was
Coolie
the first
High.
Single.
Apologies on the show. I'm in a 94 state of mind.
Yeah,
and,
so Coolie High was their first single.
Yes.
Then Luchini came out.
Yes.
Then album.
Yes.
Then Black Nostalgia.
Yes.
Got
they
it.
Had a, I mean, Camp Lo had a run on that album.
Yeah.
They had a run on that album. So
it was kind of fresh for 97, that album.
And yeah, Ski would be still working his beats into the 2010s. So he's currently working with like Currency, Talib, Kwale, Murs, Smoke Dizza. So hey, shout out to him. And supposedly, this is what I heard from an interview with Ski, he supposedly has an entire Mos Def album completed, but Mos Def won't let him release it.
Oh, what a bastard.
Well, which cool. I'm hearing Mos Def is famous for. He recorded a crap load of songs with Talib, and Talib says Mos Def won't let him release it.
Well, you know these artistic types. He's a major one.
Eccentric. We can have a whole episode just talking about Mos Def.
Oh,
Yeah, God. But it sounds exhausting. But
just saying his name right now is exhausting.
But what do you think the Source gave this album in 1994?
Oh, three mics.
They gave it three mics.
This is a three bland.
Three bland mics.
Three bland mics. See how they trash. Yep.
Well, I would say I bought the album. I burned a couple songs off of the CD, and I think I sold this CD back to Jelly's.
As you should have.
Yeah.
How much Jelly's buy this back?
Probably $3. You know, that was the going rate for Jelly's was about $3. Right. Yeah. Right. You know.
Well, congrats on not being $2.
The only time you get a $5 for a CD at Jelly's is if it was a brand new and something kind of hot. They knew
it's gotta be hot.
Yeah,
yes.
It's gotta be still kind of hot. But I'd probably give this album 2.5 back then, and I still give it 2.5.
Wow, that's very nice
of you. What do you think?
Well, just based
on what listen to the album.
I didn't even buy the album, right. So just based on what I've been hearing,
You're dropping the one mics on the last episode.
Yeah, we got to go 1.5 mics on this. And then in 2021, quite frankly, there's no way in bloody hell.
Would you rather listen to this album or this. Black Sheep Nonfiction?
Oh, I'll just take silence. Could I take radio silence? So that ain't gonna work. All right, so I'm gonna give it one mic. I'm gonna give it 1.5 in 94. 2021, half a mic. Meaning there's no way in bloody hell. I'm gonna go on YouTube and go in my car and listen to YouTube in my car of this. That ain't gonna happen.
It ain't gonna happen.
Game, set, match. Good night.
All right, so I think we can say this album was a sophomore slump. These guys never really had a success. Good single though. Shit on them.
For the record, five mic song.
And I actually like that When I Make It song. So if you guys go on YouTube and check out their first single in 92, When I Make It, it's okay. It's all right. It's generic, but it's entertaining.
Yeah, guys, you want to listen to that?
It kind of reminds me of like What's a Bro to Do. You know, it's like one of those songs that's kind of catchy.
All right.
If you know what's a bro to do, then you're old and shout out to you. All right.
Well, Future Sound was a precursor to Rockefeller as well.
So I can't recommend you guys really going and listening to this album, but I'd go and definitely listen to those Jay-Z verses. If you haven't heard Can I Get Open, go and check that video out on YouTube. And yeah.
Okay.
Original flavor. We'll never talk about them again because they're done after this.
Better not. Exactly.
All right. Now we're going to talk about a group that is probably near and dear to both you and I. We actually saw this group in concert. Together.
We went to a concert.
Yes.
Yes, whatever those things are.
Yeah,
2021.
Whatever those are now.
They were here in Hawaii at Blue Note.
That's right. This is Diggable Planets. The album is Blowout Comb. It was released October 18th, 1994 on Pendulum EMI. The heyday of Pendulum. Yeah. Pendulum would never have another year.
This was their peak.
Like 93, Pendulum's 94. Pendulum's peak, yes. It was the sophomore album of the Brooklyn-based trio Ishmael, Butterfly Butler, Mariana, Ladybug, Mecca, Vieira, and Craig Doodlebug Irving. Although the funny thing about this group is none of them are from Brooklyn. they're based in Brooklyn, but Ishmael is from Seattle, Craig is from Philly, and Mariana is from Maryland.
Go figure.
But they rep Brooklyn. called them out on that.
Well, we didn't because we couldn't deep dive into finding out.
They didn't move to Brooklyn until they got signed to Pendulum in 92.
And there's no internet, so we couldn't be, you know.
They're like, all right, Brooklyn, man.
They're Brooklyn. I guess they're Brooklyn. And then plus, if we see, let's be real here. If you're someone from Hawaii watching these videos, if they're filming it in New York, you're going to think they're from New York. If they're singing about New York, they're from New York. We're not going to know anything.
Right.
So that's okay. We'll give that a pass.
We talked about their debut album, Reaching. You know, did you enjoy that first album, their debut?
That was, great album.
Right, great album. Went gold. Yeah. Cool Like That is, you know, a hip-hop classic.
Everybody knows that one.
Everyone knows that one. A lot of people thought that Cool Like That, after that, was they were going to be like a one-hit wonder kind of PM Dawn-ish kind of group. But, you know, they won the Grammy, which is sometimes the sign of death for certain groups.
Right.
Can we, you know, and MC Hammer, Macklemore. I mean, we talk about some Grammy.
Can't forget the Grammy speech he gave. That was a memorable Grammy speech.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
I will check that out.
So they did win. Monumental. Yeah, they did win Best Rap Performance, the Grammy. And so they went to work on this album almost immediately after Reachin'.
Smart.
But they ditched the radio single model. that the pendulum was pushing him to go in. And this is a self-produced album, and you can see that they were definitely listening to what was going on in New York, and they were like, we can't come back out with the hand snap and jazz. We got to do something a little bit harder, darker. And this album is much more denser and richer and more complex, like sonically, than the debut, I argue.
Well, I enjoy this album more than the first one.
Yep.
I compare these guys in the what-if situation. Black Eyed Peas. Black Eyed Peas has a good groovy jazzy album.
Right.
And then what happened to the second album?
Yep.
They got Let's Go For More Radio. And then Let's Go For More Radio. And let's ditch the black girl and get the white girl. That's what the model would have been if Pendulum had their way.
I can see that.
Diggable's second album would be another fun, jazzy party kind of a song, but maybe a little bit more upbeat.
Right.
And then you're gonna see them go that path. But they refused, and this is what Black Eyed Peas could have done themselves, but they went for it. I compare the two groups.
Yeah.
As far as
I could totally see that. I mean, because they had the template, they had the look.
Yeah.
You know, they're good looking young people.
Yeah, two guys, a girl. The girl's cute.
The girl's cute.
That's it.
You know, throw R&B hook on it.
That's all you need.
Like, yeah, and I think the label, when they were submitting tracks on this album, it's such an ambitious album that they're like, you know what I mean? Like, it was such a shift in tone and feel. And they even, like, remember that first album, they kept rhyming about insects and bugs?
Right.
And because they were, that's what they were going for.
They're ladybug and doodlebug and all the bugs.
Because they were metaphors, the insects were the metaphors for the minorities.
Right.
In the hood. So, but with this album, they were like, they changed their names. Did you remember that? For the marketing, they said, we're no longer the bugs.
It clearly, yes. They got rid of the bugs thing. Look at the name, what's the name of the first album? State the name of the first album.
Right. It's the full name.
Refutation, Time and Space, Travels and Shit and Bugs.
Reaching a New Refutation of Time and Space.
Okay, now quite frankly, all right. That sums it up. That sums them up. They were clearly that type of, so for them to come up with cool like that, which is very, very catchy, very, very radio, but still respected on both ends, they wanted to take it a step further. Pendulum wanted to take it a step further. Okay, we got you this big hit. You got to play on Letterman. You got to perform on Letterman. Play cool like that. We need you to be back on Letterman.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? We got to come up with something. And they kind of said, fuck it. We don't want that audience.
This is why I respect this group so much, that they flipped the whole script on it. They were like, we're not going to be that group you expect us to be.
Right.
And that problem, now like changing their names, right? So Butterfly became Ish. Ladybug became Lady Mecca. They got rid of Bug. And Doodlebug became Sino. And they're going for like pro black feel, the album cover with the Afro pick, like. And Ishmael has gone on record as saying, when he was producing this album, guess what the two albums that influenced him the most, and what was the two hottest albums in New York at the time? Cool. Black Moon, Enter the Stage, and Wu-Tang, 36 Chambers.
Right. Of course.
They said there's no way we could come out with some jazzy shit.
Exactly.
They got Black Moon and Wu-Tang is hot.
Everybody went harder after they came out. Everybody had to get more hard. So it makes sense. And
they said that they recorded some songs. They scrapped it.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
They had to go the pro hip-hop feel. That first single is kind of like an old to the old school hip-hop. Jazzy Joyce is on there, for example. They put it on there. It was inevitable for them to go that route. It still looks slick. Pardon the pun. But the videos still look slick. The beats still had a flavor to it.
Your dog loves it.
Exactly. I put him in the back. I don't know how you got out. How'd you get out?
But they have a significantly bigger budget for this album. It sounds like it. Don't you think? Like, they enlisted the help of co-producer and instrumentalist Dave Darlington. I think this album is one of the best, like, it's like one of the best sophomore albums of the 90s for me. As far as...
It is. It is.
This is a high candidate for pop. Possibly making my top 10 albums.
This is like Main Ingredient. This is the same thing as Main Ingredient. Main Ingredient is a, I think, better album than Mecca and the Soul Brother. Mm-hmm. They broke up after Main Ingredient.
Right.
This one, same thing.
And the same deal.
Exactly.
I think the implosion was, I think maybe they were pointing the fingers when this album wasn't as much of a success.
Yeah.
Right? And
Burnout.
Yeah. Every song is live instrumentations as well as samples, drum machines. I mean, and tons of layers to the songs, and then you got like guest appearances from Guru, and J. Rude Damage on Graffiti.
It was Burnout. It was a situation of Burnout. Think of it like this: like they come out, they make a hit, they make money with this cool like that. Then they decide to break the mold and do their own creative.
Right.
And this is their creative peak. And then it doesn't work. If you're a group, what are you thinking at this point?
Yeah.
You're like, we're burnt out. Let's take some time off. Meaning, we ain't going to return.
Right.
Same with Pete Rock and CL Smooth. Same thing.
Yeah. Ninth Wonder, you know, Blacktilism came out. And that single blew me away when I first saw the music video.
I thought it was a great song.
I loved it. But I knew that it wasn't gonna be a commercial hit.
MTV ain't playing that during the day.
No.
The video was slick enough to play it during the day, though.
Right.
MTV, I think, could have gotten away with it.
Do you remember the second single? Do you remember what was the second single? It didn't get much airplay, and it was like their one kind of...
Oh, Dial 7.
Dial 7.
But that was a slick video, too.
It was a slick
video. And actually, Dial 7 had a more radio appeal to it than Ninth Wonder. So it's strange that it didn't work.
I don't think Pendulum could market this album. They couldn't market it. And I think... Like, yeah, this should have been a bigger...
The video alone is a slick video.
Yeah.
They didn't lose the slickness.
Was like this kind of spy one, right?
Because yeah.
They're the creamy spies.
Yeah, but it was filmed like cinematically, like a movie.
Yeah, it looked like a movie.
So I don't know why that didn't work.
I think they probably spent so much money on the budget. They released all these rare vinyl and mixes for DJs. Remember, there was a big DJ... thing with this album too, right? Weren't they marketing it a lot for DJs?
Well, as they should, to get them played on the air. But
right.
As far as the commercial aspect of it, like, I remember them performing this live on talk shows. I remember they coming out on like Soul Train, right? But it just didn't catch.
Yeah.
It just didn't catch. If Digable Planets came out now, we go 2019. Say Cool Like That came out 2019. I think they would catch for the retro feel of it. They would catch new people.
Uh-huh.
And for them doing this album in 20, they come out 2021, I think it'll work.
This album's ahead of its time.
Because are more open to people changing their entire, flipping their whole thing.
I think it's more, it'll be more respected.
Yeah.
And appreciated now, where I think their core fans were pop fans, maybe, or kind of more fair weather fans.
People who bought Cool Like That, right?
Yeah.
So then they bought that CD just for that song. They dubbed it. They sold it back to Jellies.
Because I thought the first album's good. It's fine. Digable's not like a seminal group for me. They're not like amazing. But this album was like, holy shit.
Digable made them amazing. This album made them amazing.
Yeah.
But it just didn't catch.
And
it was
an album
just timing.
That ages so damn well.
Yeah, it's still good now.
Still
I would listen to this in the car.
Freaking good. And
totally.
The fact that these guys can perform it live with a band and it's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. So this album was almost unanimously acclaimed by critics, although I could not find a source review on this. Could not find it, and I looked at every Source magazine from 1994, not a review on here for this album. So
if any
of you guys find a Source review, I would love for you guys to...
Let's predict then what they would do.
I think they would give it 3.5.
I don't think they'd give it 4.
You think so?
I'm going to say 4, because it's too damn good. It's really
cheap.
Good, and these guys are not hip-hop people. I think they would just appreciate... the production and just the overall album. I think I would go 4. I think if it was John Schechter, 4. Schechter would give this 4.
Yeah, Schechter would.
David May would give this 4, I think.
I can see that. You have a favorite song on the album?
This right here.
Graffiti.
This is it.
Yep.
Great production. It matches what it is. It feels like you're in the dark in alley in night.
Yep.
And to have J-Rue on this, perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
This is my favorite. This is my favorite song along with Night Wonder, and I do like Borochek too. I do enjoy
it. Oh, Borochek is great.
Yeah.
This whole album is
this
great.
This album, there's not one bad song.
Right.
So I would say if you haven't listened to this album, guys, go back to it. Check it out. It's
highly recommended. Yes.
I highly recommend it, right? Yeah. So, you know what was the one music publication that shit on this album in 1994? Rolling Stone.
And why was that?
Gave it a mediocre review. Saying that the album wasn't mixed properly, their voices are being drowned out. They just said it didn't sound original, of all things.
Hmm.
So I think whoever's at Rolling Stone was smoking crack at that time.
Well, let's
try. They were on some Pearl Jam shit or something.
How can they say, okay, if we had to nitpick on something, the voices in this song.
Right.
Aren't really mixed up to par with the bass line of this. I can understand what if
that
that's what
he's
saying.
That seems to be the only criticism that I could see from a lot of people saying that they didn't feel the album was mixed and mastered properly. All the vocals are drowned out by the bass line. But you know, Ishmael said like that was the vibe in New York, and I get it. He was like, that was the vibe.
Well, if I'm playing, I go back to the vinyl because I have the vinyl.
Okay.
On this. the recording on the vinyl isn't the best. Like, you're going to have to turn up the gain.
Right.
If you're playing Graffiti in the club and whatnot, you got to watch the bass, because the bass does overtake the vocal. They're talking very softly.
Right.
Where if you play it in a big loud speaker, uh-huh, you're just hearing the bass line. You're not hearing them saying anything. So I can see what
you
he's trying to say.
You definitely need to adjust the EQ a little bit on this,
it,
on this album.
To possibly help it out. But it's the only song that was mixed, I think, okay, was Ninth Wonder.
The single, yeah.
Dial 7 even sounds soft.
Yeah.
When I think about the vocals, vinyl.
All the vocals are a little soft in this album.
Okay, so you know what? Rolling Stone guy, I'm not going to disagree totally.
Mm.
Because it does sound weird, because the voices are very soft to the beat. Okay. The vinyl proves that.
Okay.
So I
that's the one. That's the one. Maybe the one negative we can say. But they're basing a whole album. It got a mediocre review from them. But I don't think it was clearly based on that. But they just said, I think for them, maybe they thought it was too much of a departure, and it didn't feel. I don't know. I mean, I didn't read the full Rolling Stone review. I just read the kind of the beginning of it, and I was like, man, they're shitting on this. So.
Okay, well, if he's saying it's unoriginal, maybe he's saying that they went away from the Bugs.
Which was original, maybe. At
which
time
was original, and then they decided to join the bandwagon of the harder edge New York. Mm, I can see
maybe,
that, too.
Maybe.
Because right now, quite frankly, this song is not going to be on the first album. This is too hardcore.
This song is awesome.
It's good, yeah. But maybe in his eyes, he's like, you guys should have stayed as the Bugs.
I get it.
Because he's probably, I don't know if he's a white guy, but a white guy is going to probably be like, stick to what you're doing and keep the formula rather than change with the times. When hip-hop is like, you got to change with the times.
And kind of a like I genre. Said, like the Reachin' album, you know, it was like, the album went gold. You know, this album like debuted number 13 on the rap album charts and barely cracked the top 40 for the pop album charts.
It did make the pop album charts though, right? The
top 100. It made it like 39. Yeah. So it like 39 on the debut, but it didn't find its legs, and the singles didn't connect.
Right.
You know, besides hip hop fans, you know, like, or hardcore guys.
Right.
It just didn't have the pop appeal, right?
Right.
So it was basically after the release of the album and what would be considered at the time the commercial failure of the album.
Yeah.
And then Lady Mecca's parents actually passed within months of each other. And she went through like a, you know, obviously she was grieving and she went through a lot of stuff. The group just split up. Right. Then Ishmael moved back to Seattle and forms Shabazz Palaces, which is like a super experimental group, right?
Yeah.
And do you like Shabazz Palaces?
They were in concert here not long ago. Yeah, I think in 2018 or something.
He loves Hawaii, man.
So they've been here before and they have a Hawaii tie. It's decent. It's politically charged.
Yeah.
It's better than a Spearhead, so that always says something. Quite probably anything's better than Spearhead, but you know.
Yeah, Mike, you're not a Michael Franti fan.
I don't want to discuss his name. I don't want to say his name. So, yeah.
But Lady Mecca would go on and release a solo album in 2015.
So, I got a Lady Mecca story.
Yeah, right. I was just going to ask you about that.
I got a Lady Bug Mecca story. All right. So, if she's listening to this, I'm sorry. This is true. So, she was here for a solo concert. This was early 2000s.
This was for her promoting this solo
her
album?
Her solo album.
Okay.
And then she did tracks with like Encore and then, she, you know.
Right.
And she performed, but then she went to Kix Hawaii and she wanted to ask them if they could sell her CD. And they said, sure, it's Lady Bug Mecca.
Right.
How much you want to sell the CD for cost? Oh, $22. So you're telling me, Lady Bug Mecca, we're going to fucking sell your CD for $44. All right. She wouldn't sell it to cost. She wouldn't sell to Kix for cost. So they're like, nope, get out of here. Don't let the Bugs hit you on your way out. So, you know, people become divas. I don't know, whatever, arrogant. I don't know, but come on, people.
She was one of the best female MCs that never, you know, I thought would have been bigger.
You would think.
She had the potential.
Definitely. She had the look. She had the voice.
Right.
I don't know what the backstory was. Maybe because she's too busy trying to be full of herself, selling CDs for $44.
I was always upset that like Ladybug Mecca could have been like another, you know, Lauryn Hill in the sense of Well, I argue, you know, better rapper. I mean, I know everyone gets mad when we shit talk Lauryn Hill.
Let's talk about Lauryn Hill.
But I do feel like there is a blueprint of the Fugees and Diggable Planets.
Of course, there is.
They only released two albums. You have one female who's a standout.
Right.
And you have one group that skyrockets to stardom and breaks them up, and then one group that kind of fizzles but makes a masterpiece. You know, they both have masterpiece. Albums under their...
It comes down to the artistic minds. Do you want to make money or do you want to stay in your lane? That's it. Wyclef wanted to make money. Praz wanted to make money. Lauryn Hill, not so much.
Yeah.
Because she went crazy.
Yeah.
But she just got the aura to continue to get her to make money just from the aura of her one and only album. The incredible album that she had. Which sucked. All right. And then same thing with the Diggable Planets. Diggable Planets were very artsy guys.
Right.
They didn't want to get out of their lane. They remained, and that was it. Could they have gotten bigger? Clearly, they could have gotten bigger
for sure,
but they didn't want to.
Yeah,
that's the comparison.
Mm.
You know,
it's good. Yeah,
Ladybug Mecca is good but she didn't want to get catapulted.
She actually, and do you remember? She actually put out two other hip hop groups. They called one's called the Dino Five, and then she had a Brazilian group called Brookzil.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Brookzil with an exclamation point.
Yes.
Yes.
Anything Brazilian, you got to have an exclamation point. Any kind of Brazilian music, it's just to add the oomph of it's Brazil, everybody.
Right. They shout out to them. They reunited. They were doing a reunion tour. It's obviously been cut short because of the pandemic.
We got to see it though. It was good.
Yeah, man.
They still got it. They still can perform. I think they're going to still draw. Nostalgia is always big.
Well, do you consider this one of the best sophomore hip-hop albums of all time as far as a follow-up album?
Yes, but not as appreciated. People don't appreciate it as much as it should.
So it's one of the best underappreciated sophomore albums.
Yes.
Is this album a possible candidate for your top 10 albums of 94?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That definitely. Definitely.
So I think we can unanimously say this is a sophomore success. And once again, what do you give it now? I actually give the album probably... four mics back then, because I would only listen to a handful of songs. I wouldn't listen to the entire thing. I also think my listening taste, I was too young for this album. But as an older person now, and this album has matured into what I like now, I think it's a five mic album now.
It's a five mic album. Yes. I mean, I loved it back then, and it fit right in with the Main Ingredient.
Right.
You know, so you could play this, play Main Ingredient. It's that whole vibe. That whole 94 vibe. So I love it.
I don't
back
know
then.
If I give it four only back in the 94 because I'm 17 years old, and like you said, there's so much party music happening and other things. I don't think I fully grasped the album. I knew it was good, but I don't think I grasped it. But I grasp it now, and I love it now. So
right, I mean, this was like listening to it on the bus music for me. So
this is a great walking like just go walk around town,
right?
Man, this is like one of those things, man. Like. When we went up to New York, and I'm like listening to this in my earbuds, walking around.
Oh, that's
New York,
the ultimate.
That's the ultimate.
Right. Yeah. That was
my shit right there.
Right. I gotta give it 4.5 back in the day, and I give it 5 now.
Nice. I do feel like it's only gotten better.
Yeah. Just clearly, you can listen to this in the car.
All right. Well, aren't you happy? We're ending the show on a good note here.
Thank God.
Yeah. Only one album we've kind of shit on, an original flavor. It could have been worse.
Well, I shit on it, but you know. I gave it one mic, didn't I? Or half a mic? Or
I think you gave it one and a half. I think you gave it 1.5, which was not as low as... You give Black Sheep one mic.
That's true. Yes. Well, and there are going to be a lot more worse ones coming up later.
Oh, well, are we going to... Before we do some promos here, but let's talk about... Let's just do a sneak preview of what we're going to be talking about next week. Are you excited?
All right. Yeah, I'm excited. Well...
Now, we're not going to tell you who this is, but I'm sure most of the listeners out there...
They're going to know this song. They're going to know this
song.
So
we'll let you guys sit with this one for a little bit. But tell us what else you guys got. What else you got going on with the Sleep Time's Over network of shows? You got your live IGs.
6:30 p.m.
6:30 on Wednesdays.
Every Wednesday.
We got Fitness the Other F Word dropping every Friday.
Every Friday.
With co-host Summer Lee.
Sure.
Shout out Summer. She's getting better and better on the mic.
I don't know if she's getting more crazy on the mic.
And I just keep hearing all of these stories of this Miss Drizzy character on the show. I don't know who this...
She was on the show. Yeah, she was the audience of one.
But then it was just on the internet, on the gym show, right? The gym. But then it was like She was like a.
She showed her face though. Finally, if you watch the YouTube, it's a video show.
I didn't get to watch
too.
The YouTube. I only listen to audio.
She's there.
Okay, I gotta check it out.
She's sitting there. The audience of one. She was at Brado Power. Shout out.
So yes, I didn't get to watch the video. I listened to all the show's audio.
Oh.
And shout out to your last episode, the viewer mail listener mail.
Yeah, please email her. She's really desperate for emails.
I like it.
She's lonely and desperate. So yeah,
answered all my questions about protein powders.
Yeah,
that I wanted to hear.
That was a long question.
That was a deep, but you went in depth, dudes. Which I love it, man. You're the fitness hip hop guru, dude.
God,
you got it.
I figured we.
I gotta turn this shit down. Yeah, I hate this song. Please,
can we just have silence for a second? So, every Friday, fitness, the other F word. This show is Thursday. IG Lives on Wednesday. We got the website.
That's right.
www.sleeptimesover.com.
Yeah,
we got the merch.
Your merch.
The Bum By You Learn hat is online. We got the Nevermind shirt.
Yep.
Do you have a Nevermind shirt?
That's the one shirt I want. I have the Make IG Live Great Again.
Oh, right. You got that one.
Right.
Yes.
You gave me that one. I got my mask. Get your mask, too. Mask it up, y'all.
We still got masks going on in this society. Yep.
Yes, we do.
It ain't going away. I predict masks go away by September.
You think so?
Yeah. Mask will be optional. It's not going to be required anymore.
Wow.
The mandate will end September.
You heard it here, folks.
I think so.
You heard it here.
Where you can still wear it as an option.
All right.
Yes. And then the distancing will be optional. It'll move to optional. That's my
question. This is Nostradamus over here.
Shout out, Yomatic. Yeah. I mean, for the people that are in Hawaii listening to this, all right, well, God bless you.
Yep.
But, I mean, that's what's going on, right? I mean, we have this, we're in tier 3 is what they call it. I said we go tier 4 by the end of March.
All right. When can we go, when can we see like a concert? Not like this small venue stuff.
As like a regular thing.
Yeah, like a concert.
I go August.
Okay. All right.
August.
I like it.
Because if you figure if we're at tier 4 by March.
Yeah.
What's going to happen in April, May, and June?
Mm-hmm.
More people are going to take the vaccine. That's basically how this is going to go, whether you like it or not, or want to or not.
Then they'll open up the floodgates for all the 80s bands to come to Hawaii, like Chicago and
hey, Tiffany's
Hall
performing.
Hall & Oates, Tiffany.
Tiffany was just here.
Right.
Who went to that one?
I don't know.
I don't even know two Tiffany songs.
Oh, I know two Tiffany songs.
I know you do, but you should have been there. So I'm just saying, like, yeah, more concerts are coming. August, I think, will be you'll see I don't even want to say packed, but people closer together in a concert. Somebody on stage.
Right.
You know, not spaced out.
I appreciate, again, doing this show with me, man, and listening to these old albums and digging into that dungeon of memories.
Right. So you notice after I said all that shit, we have alarms going off now.
Yeah.
People are trying to shut this down. We have the siren, the monthly siren going off. Yeah. Car alarms going on. People don't want me to say this shit. So better sign out.
Can't you? And then we can't wait. We're going to talk about TikTok next week.
Oh, fuck.
Good Lord.
Yeah, we'll see them in concert come to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Are you going to that concert in Hawaii, everyone? You want to go see the people who sang TikTok? It's not the app. It was a song in 94.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, shit.
They were the keepers of something, right? They were the keepers
Another F word.
Other F word.
Yeah. God.
Anyways, we appreciate you guys checking out another episode. And we'll see you next week. Peace.